It was kind of a crazy story. I'd just gotten married. Perry was just born, and I was asking permission from the missus to go fishing, you know, on my day off. You know, do you need anything around the house? Can I go fishing, you know, my friends this day? And it just got to the point where she was getting so mad that, like, a beautiful day and I'm off and, honey, can I go fishing? And then she's like, why don't you just go get your captain's license already? Like, light bulb went off. And that next week I was in captain school and started guiding, and it kind of just fell into place over the years. And now I'm almost 25 years in now.
This is the Tom Rowland Podcast. Fascinating stories to amaze, encourage, and inspire you in fishing, fitness, and the outdoors. And we're brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee. I started this podcast as a way to connect with my friends, people that I admire and respect, and you. It has been a learning journey that's made me a better person, a better fisherman, a better father, and a better athlete. I'm so happy that you're on this journey with me, and I'd love to hear from you with show suggestions, guest suggestions, or questions. The best way to get a hold of me is through text. You can text 305-930-7346 for the fastest response, but if you prefer to email, you can send that to podcast@saltwaterexperience.com. That's a dedicated email address just for the show. If you like this show, you can show your support by posting about it on social media and tagging me. Text the link to a couple of friends that may also enjoy it, and subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you feel like I've earned it. The website is TomRowlandPodcast.com, and that is where everything lives. All past shows, you can go and listen to any show. You can look up all the different shows that we've done, both the How-To Tuesdays, the Full Links, and the Physical Fridays. They all live on TomRowlandPodcast.com. And the social media is Tom_Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D, on Instagram, or you can go to our big account, Saltwater_Experience. I hope to hear from you soon. So now, let's get on to today's show.
My name is Wes Bedell, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Guys, good to see you, man. We got Wes, Perry, Weston. Mm-hmm. Right on, man. Good to have you guys here at iCast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, for sure. We got hooked up with my friend Clay Guida, who's also your friend. Yes. Clay Guida. You guys have fished with him. He's a maniac and an awesome, all-around great guy. But I love the story, man, because I've got two boys of my own. Neither wanted to be a fishing guide. And both of your boys are fishing guides. And I saw this one post, the one that got me, and I was like, I got to get these guys on the podcast. You were going out, Wes, and you got your clients in the boat, and you look over here and there's one of your boys over there. And then you look over here and there's another one going over here.
Yeah.
And you just had this post. You were really proud of your boys, and they were following in your footsteps. And it was just really cool because we have some families in the Florida Keys that are second and third generation guides. But there'll be like two boys and only one will be a guide and the other will do something else. And you guys are one of the few families that I know where both, all of you, are going into the guiding world. So what's that been like?
Well, the way it kind of started was I kind of knew that we had something special. We entered this local family tournament in Naples and we fished it for a long duration, and we kept winning every single year. And it came to 10 years in a row. And we were walking up to the podium for the largest snook, largest redfish trophies again. And I saw the faces of everyone in the tables of the banquet, just kind of just shaking their heads like, oh my God, another one, you know? And, I knew right then we had something special, and I also knew that we had to step back a little bit and let the other families have a go at it.
Yeah.
And I knew right then that we had a special team and to just need to nourish it a little bit and let it blossom.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
To win anything 10 times in a row is pretty, pretty exceptional.
We even had two slams in there too. We got largest trout, redfish, and snook.
That's awesome. I mean, even to win, I mean, sometimes you just get tired of it. It's just like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, we win that every year.
Sure.
You know, you do that 4, 5, 6, 7 times. I mean, when do you say, and that 10 is a nice even number.
It was.
Or you can kind of like, I don't think we need to do that anymore.
But yeah.
That's exceptionally good to be able to do that. Any kind of tournament, anything.
Yeah.
10 times.
Yeah.
That's right on.
And they were, you know, not even in middle school. You know, we started, I think the first one, they were 6 and 10. First tournament we did, and largest snook, largest redfish. Next year, largest snook, largest redfish, and just kept kind of happening and falling in our lap. And at that moment, I'm like, I knew that something was going to happen here.
You know, it's not always like roses when that happens, right? Because you win the first time and they're like, oh, that's cool. You won with your two little kids. That's really nice.
Yeah.
And then the second time they're like, huh.
Yeah.
And the third time they're like, man, I think those guys are cheating. You know, and the fourth time,
that's exactly,
then it's fifth time, and it's like, man, they're definitely cheating. But then there's all kinds of talk. Like, did you experience that? Because I've certainly experienced it.
We did. We did experience the cheater, and we had, they always checked our ruler at the end of the time, and it was always like, you know, let's see our pictures, where are you guys fishing, and all of that. So it was, even had a target on our back even back then.
Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that as a dad? You know, with your young boys,
it's a tough one. I have to bite my tongue a lot. They kind of have to tell me to step back a little bit because, you know, I'm still kind of Papa Bear sometimes, you know, and protecting them and stuff. And obviously they're equipped and well-knowledged and have even picked up some tricks that I didn't even show them, you mm-hmm. know? So that's kind of, they're taking what I've shown them and taking it to the next level, and I can only be so proud.
Of course. I mean, that's what fishing is, right? Like,
yes,
you know, each of you have, I'm sure, different, a little bit different interests, a little bit different, mentors or people that you look for, people that you fished with, and you take a little piece here and a little piece there. And then all of a sudden somebody's got a little something that somebody else doesn't.
That's right.
Right. So, Weston, you're older, right?
I'm youngest.
You're the youngest?
Yeah.
Oldest. Okay. Here. So you're 22.
I'm 22. He's 25.
You're 25. Yes. Okay. So Perry, when did you think about starting to guide?
Honestly, so Wes and I were both different on that. He always thought he wanted to be a guide his whole time growing up. I honestly never thought that one bit as a kid.
Really?
Liked fishing, enjoyed it. Never really looked at it that way. I went to school for a couple years after high school, community college. No real path set, just kind of messing around, going to school, being a kid, having fun. Moved back after 2 years, and ironically, he took a spill off the dock pretty bad.
Your dad?
Yeah. He's like, you're going to come be my mate. I need a hand. And after like the first or second charter, I'm like, what was I even thinking this whole time?
Because it was awesome.
Yeah,
you loved it.
Just fell in love with it all over again.
So you can probably throw a cast net pretty good. You're a big, big, strong guy.
I can, yes. Yeah.
I haven't thrown in a long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, neither has Robert Trossett. All of a sudden, you know, it's
like, sure.
His son is very good at throwing the cast net. But then when he graduated to that, he was like, now it might be time for a mate too.
Yes.
But yeah, that's great. And then how did your journey start?
So beginning in that tournament that we did, that we won a lot, that kind of built my love for fishing. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to do what he did, you know, and even when I was starting in middle school and I got to the kind of the mature stage, I would have weekends off or even spring break or Christmas break. And my father would be like, do you want to work for me and help, you know, and rig and, you know, bait hooks and do whatever. And I would just do that with him. And he would, you know, throw me like half the tip. And I just thought it was awesome, you know, but the money really wasn't what I was for, you know, it was the expression of the people's face after the charter and how much of a good time that they actually had. Mm-hmm. And then after I kind of saw that growing up, that made me love the game even more.
That is the thing about guiding. When people ask me, you know, I don't guide anymore, but they ask me like, what do you miss about guiding? I would say guiding is instant gratification. Like you have all this hard work that you've done all this homework for years to prepare for this trip. Then there's the actual preparing for the trip. And then you go out and you show someone and you have good communication with someone. You say, what would be a fantastic trip for you today? Well, I've never caught a permit. I'd love to do that. Okay. So you put a plan together, you go out, you catch a permit and you just see this person with this, they're so happy. You've made their
life,
in a lot of ways. And it's just this instant gratification that I don't really get anywhere else in my life, that this one person has so much gratitude and you can just feel it. coming off of them. And not everybody's like that.
No.
Like, I mean, for certain clients, it means a tremendous amount. For other people, they could really care less. They don't even know what it is. Like, yeah. They could catch a Jack Crevel. It's a permit. It doesn't matter. It fought. And they're happy about it. It's fun. But you get that special client that it really means something to them. And that is an experience that it's hard to put it in any other context other than, I don't know, guiding. Like, it's fantastic.
You're
like that.
Giving those people a memory that they're never, ever going to forget. And I have had clients come back year after year, and they're like, you remember that one fish you caught with me? Like, I don't really remember it. I'm sorry, but they remember it.
They do.
So boy, they remember that. You know, we caught 19 permit that day. I'm sorry I don't remember that one that was a little bit bigger, but yeah. But I do remember the time and the day and the time spent. And it's
funny, but I bet if you saw a picture of that thing, you would be like, oh yeah, I remember that.
That one was spicy.
You know, because
yes.
I just had a client just post something, or he sent me a picture. And I was like, can I post this on social media? He says, yeah, sure. And you could tell these guys won't understand this, but there used to be like photo albums, and we used to have picture cameras that would have 36, 24, or 12 right. pictures on them. And you would start the day and you're like, ooh, I've only got 8 pictures.
Yeah.
Better be careful with, you know, did you bring extra film? No, I didn't bring extra film. So, okay, we got 8. So yep. Is that the biggest fish we're going to catch today? That's right. I don't know. We better take a picture. Yep. Anyway, this guy, he had, he took a picture of his photo album, and in the photo album, like, It was kind of like scrapbooking. Like, you almost did it. Like, you put this thing in the photo album. There's a little place on the side to take notes and stuff. And he had written down the time of the day, the Marquesas, Captain Tom Roland, you know, on this day at this time, Key West. Wow. And then he had done on the next permit and the next permit. And he sent me this thing. He said, you remember that day we caught 3 permit? And it was just one of my favorite days ever. And then I look at the picture and I'm like, oh yeah, I do kind of remember this. Right. But it was just so cool to see the detail that he had put. And it obviously meant so much to this guy. And then he had kept it all this time.
Those are the memories that I think the other people outside the guide community can't really experience or appreciate, because those are memories that we give people that I don't think anybody else can.
Yeah. It's a special thing with the clients as well. And it you become real friends, and they become like family. I'm sure you've seen that, people that have fished with your dad over the years, and they send Christmas cards and
they're
presents
fishing with
and
their kids now.
Are they?
They're fishing the next generation.
That's so cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing to see that go down.
That's so cool. So what about your, how did you start guiding?
I was, always fished growing up, born and raised in Naples. You know, my dad, we had a timeshare in the Keys, and we spent all lobster seasons there, and just always loved the sport and being in the water and around the water. And it was kind of a crazy story. I'd just gotten married. Perry was just born, and I was asking permission from the missus to go fishing, you know, on my day off. You know, do you need anything around the house? Can I go fishing with, you know, my friends this day? And it just got to the point where she was getting so mad that, like, a beautiful day and I'm off and, honey, can I go fishing? And then she's like, why don't you just go get your captain's license already? Like, light bulb went off. And that next week I was in captain school and started guiding, and it kind of just fell into place over the years. And now I'm almost 25 years in now. So it's kind of,
what were you doing before? What was the source of income before you did
bartending?
This? Okay.
Bartending. So I still did that a little bit on the side. I moonlighted a little bit. It was a great way. I still have clientele that I handed my business card mm-hmm. over the bar, and some of those people are still with us for 20 plus years.
Nice.
Yeah. Some of them have even moved from up north to Naples, just to our area, so they can fish with us year round.
So you're probably real close to my age. How old are you?
I'm 51.
51. I'm 53. So tell me what Naples was like when you grew up there as a kid.
It was, it's kind of crazy that the fishing was, everyone asked me this is a question a lot, you know, was the fishing better back then? I'd like to say the fishing was probably the same. There just wasn't as much pressure. There wasn't, you know, people fighting over spots like now. Like, you come out of the dock in the morning and everyone's hammered down running to certain wrecks offshore because they know those fish are holding certain permit at certain tides. And so it's like more of a shotgun race than it is to kind of how you want to plan your day out.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of, that kind of, you know, made it really difficult, you know, and then everybody seeing what we do and trying to follow us. And we caught a rental boat out by us the other day throwing crabs. And I, you know, said, you know, hey, how's it going? You know, what are you guys doing? They're like, and he took his camera out and started taking pictures of us. And I'm like, hi, Captain West Bedell on a mission charge. He's like, oh, I know who you are. Wait a minute. You know who I am. You're 50 yards off my bow and you're throwing crabs. Like,
wow.
In a rental boat. So it's just stuff like that is stuff that we deal with on the daily, unfortunately.
So that's an interesting side note, a little rabbit hole to go down, especially with younger perspective of how do you deal with, how do you manage social media? Because social media is very important to the guide world. That's how we get a lot of business, right? Like you put out there what you catch. People are like, oh, I'd like to catch that. You get a call, you take a charter, right? Seems one-to-one, but it's not one-to-one because how do you guys, like you're going to have a different dad, you're going to have a different perspective on this, but I'm interested from the boys, like how do you manage the social media? Do you wait a couple of days and post or do you just...
Sometimes, yeah.
It'll depend. Like timing is everything on that. Like say it's Friday and we go out and crush it and the weekends come in, we're not going to put up 20 pictures of all the giant permit we just caught. But say, hey, gorgeous day, we got some inclement weather coming, let's put it up right we get in. You know, kind of try and find that happy medium of not sending people out to follow you, essentially. Yeah.
What if you're booked for the next 3 weeks? How does that affect your posting?
We still like to get stuff up there, you know, just be mindful of the pictures we're taking and posting and hey, don't put this dock where you're fishing and holding this giant snook up on the next day, you know, little things like that.
Mm-hmm. It's such a weird thing because it's, it's a really fine line and you'll get a guide that is just getting into the business and they want to show everything because they don't have the business. But then you get a guy that has the business and they don't want to show anything. And then all of a sudden, they don't have any trips. And it's like this real fine line. You got to be active, but you can't be too active. You blur the background too much, then people are like, ah, I don't like that. That's not cool. Like, how do you, it's just a real kind of question that we all have to ask is like, what is the future of fishing and social media? I don't know.
It's a double-edged sword for sure.
Yeah.
And with that note too, I think that even with the Instagram and the spawn of that has just made so many captains and guides just pop up out of the social media land. And it's just kind of happened overnight. You know, it's just one day we're at the dock and it's like, who's that guy? Who's this guy? You know, and growing up there and even these guys know too, we know everybody, you know, it's a small town or at least it used to be. And, you know, we pretty can't go anywhere without seeing somebody we know, you know, someone pops up on the scene and they're following you around and it's a target that we wish we could get off our back sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a compliment in one way, you know,
it's a good way to look at it.
It actually is.
It's a compliment that anyone would even care what you're doing or follow you or say, those are the guys, follow them, figure out what's going on. But then I don't know, then you have to figure out like, okay, this person is obviously following me. So now where am I going to go? I'm changing plans.
We know that the big girls are going to be right there in an hour. So it's like, we need to just post up and kind of wait, you know, it's so hard too.
Yeah. So tell me about the boats that you guys run. What style boats do you run?
Kind of like the bay boat hybrid kind of, with the tower. So we've got a 21 foot privateer open center console with a half tower. And then we've got a 23 Sabala with the full tower.
Okay. And then, and just two boats, you got three boats.
We got a third one on the way.
Okay. And so nobody, is there room in your operation for a skiff or, like where does that fit in?
We had a skiff. I had a skiff and we just got rid of it last year. I did love it. It was more of a toy than it was a client boat. We did get some fly fishing clients and I did have a few of my regulars and I did would get some referrals from the fly shop, but it just really wasn't bringing the revenue in that another, you know, bigger passenger boat, you know, and I needed to get something for Perry. He was next in line and needed to get something in the mix where he can do at least three people.
That's a great start to the conversation. We're going to take a short break and get right back to the show in just a moment.
That's a big deal with a bay boat.
It's a really big deal. Those, that's just the price from the, you know, from the skiff to two passenger to that three passenger is, you know, $300-$400 sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, so it was, and even going out to get bait, sometimes you couldn't get out there in the skiff because all our bait's on the wrecks and it's 2 miles out. And you know how that goes. It's not always nice out there sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the little 17 skiff, we put it through it though. And it's always in the back of my mind. I want to get another one. I will get another one. I miss it dearly. I miss going out and throwing topwater plugs after the rain and, you mm-hmm. know, at this time of year. And it's special. I do love it.
It's interesting that all of you, kind of gravitated to the same style of fishing, because you always have like some families where you have the one kid that wants to be the fly fisherman, then you have the other kid that wants to be the offshore guy. And then you got maybe somebody else that wants to be kind of the do it all. Mm-hmm. But the fly fishing kid doesn't, maybe they get seasick. I don't know. They don't want anything to do with going offshore. And it's just interesting that you guys have kind of gravitated towards the same style fishing, or I don't know. Do you all kind of do the same style fishing? Tell me what, like a year, like break down the year for me in Naples. I mean, we're not very far away in the Florida Keys, but it's different fisheries, you know?
Sure.
And I fish Naples some. I think it's one of the most beautiful places ever as far as the beach goes. And that's one of the reasons why I was asking you about what it was like growing up, because I'm pretty sure that there weren't the building on the beaches like there are. But that sand on those beaches in Naples, that is the most comfortable sand, the finest, smoothest.
It's like marshmallows.
It's the craziest sand ever.
And we still have Key Wade Island too. It's 9 miles long and it's uninhabited. There's a few straggler homes on there, but I mean, you could literally put the boat right in the trough and run the whole beach and not even see a footprint or see anything.
Wow.
It's pretty nice. It's really, really nice. And that's where we get our tarpon migration, right along that beach. And even seen some permit in there. We get the snook laying right on the beach and there's nobody around. There's no houses. There's no condos, you know, so we get that whole 9 mile stretch just to spread our wings and let everything kind of come to us.
Nice.
Yes.
That's great. So like, let's start in January and like, what's the fishing like January all the way through the,
do we have whole to talk about it? Man, I
don't January, want to, we're in shrimp mode. Yeah. It's the water's dirty. Northwest winds, chocolate milk.
So how many days are you getting in January?
We're busy.
You're fishing.
Oh yeah, we're fishing
hard. It's just
hard. Yeah, it's just difficult. Yeah. Wintertime fishing for us is it's tricky. You know, we can't get offshore as much. When we can, we're not going as far. You know, we're catching lots of sheep's head, some redfish here and there, trout, black drum, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But that whole time we're just patiently waiting for spring and summer.
Okay, and so when's the transition from kind of winter into kind of spring? What does that look like?
So February will kind of start getting a turnaround, but it'll always just kind of be a false alarm. Like we'll get a week, it warms up, start catching some bait, fish are chewing, everything's good, and then boom, another cold front.
Yeah.
And that'll even kind of trail into March, and even some this year, April, we had a few cold fronts. But usually towards the end of the March, start of April, that's when we're pretty much full go springtime fishing.
Mm-hmm. And the permit that you guys are catching, you say that you're seeing some of them on the beaches and in inshore, but is that mostly, I mean, would you consider your permit fishery mostly an offshore permit fishery?
Offshore permit fishery. Anywhere from the wrecks from 5 to 30 miles, depending on the day, is where we kind of start our window. And it's a lot of tide based. A lot of these fish are floating away from the structures and they just waiting for that trigger to come up and then they float in. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of adapted to where and when we need to be is when that light switch comes on and the floodgates open and we just sitting there ready for them.
So let's talk about that if you want to. I mean, I don't want you to give away too much, but it's interesting because I fish permit on the wrecks on in the Keys, both on the ocean side, and then we have wrecks all around the Marquesas that are in the quicksands area. They're shallow wrecks. A lot of times you can just see the wreck and see the fish. And then I fish them on coral heads and fish them in all different types of, you know, on the flats, mm-hmm. of course, in the channels. Yes. And we have like a lot of what a permit wants. Mm-hmm. I don't know of many situations that I've encountered anywhere else that we don't have in the Florida Keys, right? Like
flats, mangroves, situations where they're like right up in the mangroves and in the mangrove shoots. And that's pretty dang cool.
Yes.
All the way out to the ocean, you know, and the reef and the wrecks and all that stuff. But your, permit fishery, that's it's, I mean, you guys are getting some really big ones. They look really big. They're on big. Your Instagram.
Yeah. They're really big. Yeah. We actually got, Weston and I actually got one, the first one that we got at this spot that cool. we found. I sent some of the regs to Ross at BTT. And, he said that's a monster. He goes, there's no way to weigh it, but he said it was anywhere between 45 and 55 pounds. He goes, we'll call it 50 all day. So coming from BTT and Ross, and I will take that stat.
Do you have any sort of a measurement? Like, do you weigh them?
Try not to, just I don't want to hang them on the boga.
Yeah, you but know? You can weigh them in the net. That's what I used to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've kind of seen that.
So I'll net them and just weigh the whole net and everything.
With a 60-pound boga?
Yeah, you can do it with a 60-pound boga or, you know, whatever kind of digital scale that you have.
Okay.
And have a pretty good idea of it. And I was very surprised at how few were 40.
Really?
But, yeah. And then 30, like on the flats, how few are 30?
Okay.
And there's a lot of them that are like 28, 27, 26, 25, and more, the lower you go, the more plentiful they are. But to get one on the flats that's over 30 is like a really, really good thing. And I found that if I could put my fist inside of the fish's mouth,
that's the same thing.
It would go over 30.
Sure.
And I was wondering if you guys had come up with anything like that.
We knew that kind of if the fish was in between, you know, 35 and 40 inches, you could do the hand trick and kind of guesstimate it. You know, it's you'd hate to ballpark those things because they look so big, you know,
they do.
And then you're just like, hey, that's only 25 pounds. You're like, my arm does not feel like that fish was 25 pounds.
I know. They really do seem bigger. And then when I started weighing them, it's like, you know, I would have said that was 34 pounds, 35 pounds. And it's 28 because some of them have such a heavy head and then they're not, and maybe it's the time of the year or whatever, but they're not as heavy in the body. And then I started figuring out that trick. I'm like, you know, there's no reason to even weigh this one. It's not going to be over 30. Mm-hmm. And the customer's like, what? Like, it seems like it'd be over 30. You're like, you want me to weigh it? I'll show you. 27 pounds.
Wow.
And I don't know. Maybe it's just the size of my fist or whatever. But it was pretty much a pretty good measurement of those fish. And then when you catch them small, you know, their mouths are like not much bigger than a bonefish.
Yeah.
It's a funny fish, the permit. Like, why do you guys like the permit so much?
Many reasons. They're such an intricate fish. Obviously super fun to catch and, just the challenge it presents. You know, a lot of people have that misconceived notion that catching the fish on the wreck is far more easier than catching the fish on the flat. And, in some ways, yes, but in some ways, no, at the same time. So, you know, everyone's a challenge in its own way.
And you think that they're challenging on the wrecks, one of the reasons because they go in the wreck?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, literally as soon as they feel that tension and that hook right in the corner of their mouth, their first instinct is going to be, I've seen this game play out before. I'm going to shoot right for the wreck and try to break this guy off. And those literally the first few seconds of the fight is just so crucial. And you literally have to use, it's hand-to-hand combat pretty much. You're literally going, you're using all your strength. That fish is using all of its strength. And I don't see how you couldn't love a fish like that.
What do you tell the clients when that's happening? What's the coaching? You know it's going to happen. You put it out there. You hook up. You know it's a permit. What's the coaching?
So, I mean, literally, we pull up to the wreck, and before we even send out a crab, we give them the rundown. I'm going to be yelling in your ear while this is going down, but what you have to do is, I tell them, no rods in the rod holder. You're going to hold it. And those permit, they have such a subtle eat, you know, you can kind of put your finger on the line. You just feel a little bounce and a little flick almost. And, you know, sometimes the clients won't see it, but I'll keep my eye on the line and, you know, you see it bounce and I just, hey, start reeling quick. And sure enough, reel down really quick, fast as you can, stay up high and we're going to drive away.
And then
drag them off the wrecks.
Yeah.
You have to drag them. You can't, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's straight up trial by fire. You have 10 seconds. You have 10 seconds right now to get that fish away from that wreck. And they're like,
especially those big ones.
Yeah.
What's scare them though.
What's the rig that you guys have come up with? The rod, the reel, the line, the hook.
We use tarpon tackle. We use, what's the size of the rod?
They're 7-11 or an 8-foot rod. Yeah,
those, like St. Croix Mojos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice rod.
Those rods are very, they're amazing.
The 7-foot 11. I started using that for tarpon, you know, a much heavier one than what you're using for the permit, I'm sure. But started using those for tarpon around the bridges. And man, you can throw a mullet so far with those things.
A crab, too. You could really just, I mean, country mile. Send it a crab. It's insane. And we,
but it also helps to get around the engines and stuff. That longer run. Trolling really motor like as well, that. Too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you guys are using trolling motors out there and spot locking.
Yeah.
That's game a lot changer. Nicer than
it really dropping is the anchor. Yeah, back in the day when I had to learn how these fish, I was anchoring up on these wrecks and I could see them mooning, you know, half a mile away and bobbing. And I'm like, God, my clients are like, there's permit over there. I'm like, now I'm just beep, beep. You know, it's these guys have us so lucky. You know, we literally had to go through the trenches and really had some frustrating charters, and, you know, and back then I would start drifting into them. I'd go way up ahead of a wreck and just drift and that load everybody up. And when I could see them, you know, put them in them. But now it's just there, that trolling motor game is, it's ridiculous.
We're going to take a quick break and get right back to the show in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So do you use braid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
And then what leader?
25 most of the time.
Is that kind of where you've determined with your water clarity and the situation that you're in, that's as much as you can get away with?
We get far more eats. You know, on some spots, like we have some wrecks, the wreck is just so big. So you can only put so much force on that 25 and so much drag. So what we'll do at some spots is we'll send out one rig with the 25 and another rig with like 40 or 50, just in case. And sometimes they will eat it. Those fish, 9 out of 10 of them are always going to catch just because we can fight them with so much drag.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the hook?
We use anywhere from a 3 to a 5-odd circle hook.
Mm-hmm. Circle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Always.
Always.
Always. I'm a huge believer in the circle hook. When I first got to the Keys, I was fishing for permit and they would smash the crab and send it back. And I'd get a J hook with a little piece of shell on it all the time.
We get that sometimes.
Yeah, not with a circle hook that much, though.
Not as much, no. And definitely not.
That's a big, big change.
When they just grab it, just right, they miss that, just that hook, you know, and they'll have a leg or just a corner, you know, sometimes. But
it's rare.
It's rare. We call that the drive-by, you know. Yeah. It happens every time of time.
So how did you guys get hooked up with Clay Guida?
I met Clay at a music festival, around 2016. I knew he liked fishing. I met, another friend of mine in Naples has taken him out a couple times. And, I kind of knew he was going to be there. And ironically, we walked up to the keg at the same time. He was over there to get a beer. I'm like, hey, I introduced myself, you know, and we started talking about fishing instantly while we're watching this killer music festival backstage, you know, and kind of enjoying and getting to know each other. And then after that, just kind of kept talking on Instagram. And I kept telling him, you know, his parents were in the market of buying a house in Cape Coral around that time. So I'm like, hey, if you're ever in the town, you know, give me a call and let's go fishing. And first time I took him out in the skiff and he took his shirt off immediately. It was like winter time and I'm pulling him around crystal clear water. And, you know, I'm like, hey, Clay, I got 2 redfish, 11 o'clock coming right at you. It doesn't even hesitate. Just hits him right in the head. I'm like, Clay, just let him get a little closer. You know, he's very aggressive on the boat, but I'm sure that comes with the UFC and the wrestling.
Yeah.
He just wants to hold it right now. And we love his energy and he's just, he's an all around great guy. He's been really great to our family and my boys and we love him like a brother. He's a great friend.
He is, man.
Friend.
He's a great dude. And so you've hosted like some of his trips, right? Like you guys are the guides.
We have one when we get back on Sunday, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's that trip like? Who comes on a trip like that?
I'm not sure. He said he's bringing some people from here. So I'm not really sure. I don't know. Not sure if it's the Realtree boys or he's bringing the Gator Cooler guys. I'm not really sure who. He didn't really specify that. He said he was bringing a couple guys and they wanted to catch some permits. So I'm sure we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Well, yeah, that sounds fun. he's incredible with his, you know, with his career, like the number of fights that he's had in the UFC.
It's incredible. He's an animal.
Yeah. But durability too. And it's, longevity.
Yes. I mean, and for his, he's not a spring chicken either. You know, he's like, you know, most UFC guys are in their 40s. That doesn't really happen. Either,
no, I mean,
you know?
Him and Jim Miller right now, because Cowboy Cerrone just retired.
Yeah, he did.
And so he was the third. There were those three guys that have the most fights. And so, and they put Cerrone up against Jim Miller.
It's crazy.
Like that was a tough fight. Like, okay, you got two veterans here.
Sure.
Really? I don't know. But Clay, he's right there with him. So were you guys UFC fans before you fished with Clay or?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, once we kind of met Clay for the first time, I started watching him more, and I followed him on Instagram once I kind of met him and everything. And I saw the video of like what his coach or his brother or whatever does to him before the fight, and slaps him in the face really quick. And I was like, why did you become friends with this guy?
Did he burp? Have you seen the one where he burps? Yeah. He burps in the middle of his fights like all the time. I've been waiting for him to burp on the boat, but he doesn't. It, apparently, no. Fishing doesn't have the same the same reaction as the fighting.
Well, that is just so funny. The burps and just that slapping, and I saw that, and dude, I was just kind of like instantly like, I kind of want to take him fishing, but I don't want him to do that with a fish at all. Anything, man. But you know, we took him on the boat. We got him that last permit that he got with us was just a straight monster. And you know, after that on the ride back home, you know, my dad and my brother were in the tower, and I was down there sitting with him, and he just, you know, we just started talking about fishing and his love for it and my love for it. And you know, he just talked about, you know, I don't understand anybody that couldn't like fishing, man. Like, this is just so cool. And it's so special that you and your family are out here and everything. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm glad you're here too, man. This is super special.
Yeah. It's funny with, with people like Clay. Well, there aren't very many people like Clay. I mean, they're just not, right. Yeah. But what I mean, and like high level martial artists, people that, you know, he's a straight up assassin.
Yes.
But he doesn't act like that.
He's, the
he's like the most low key, nicest guy. And I've met quite a few guys of that caliber now. And they're all like that. Like they know they could kill you. So they don't have, there's no reason.
there's no
reason for him to have this big ego because he, why?
Yeah.
Like he's the nicest guy
ever. So that's the thing you're thinking about. He's just
right. He's a nice, but it for so many people, like I've introduced my wife to some of the fighters, and she was like, that guy's a fighter?
Like, you'd rip your face off.
Oh yeah, he's a fighter. Oh yeah, he's a fighter. And she's like, but he's so nice. And I'm like, yeah. Why does he have any reason not
he's
to be
not
nice?
He's not clocked in right
he's
now.
He's just so nice. Like he is. He's just so nice. So we're sitting here at ICAST. Is this your first time to come to ICAST?
Their first time. I've been to one. Came to one about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I had invites from the last 5 years to every other year, and I would always blow it off to go fishing.
Well, I mean, it is a good time to fish.
Everybody's here, and like I have a guide buddy of mine who lives in Biscayne Bay, and he's like, "Hey, you know, he'd give me the call every year. He's like, everybody's at ICAST, they're tailing. You know, we'd go catch permit and bonefish. And we have every flat to ourselves, no one around, and I started falling into that, like, hey, let's go fishing during ICAST, and kind of everything kind of went like that. But you know, this time was special. They're getting a little bit older. They're, you know, taking on the business as well. And it's time to get our foot in the door and do a lap and walk around and see what we can do here.
Nice. What, do you guys have any kind of, expectations, or do you have any idea what is on the other side of that door? Do you know, do you care?
We care. No, roughly, but honestly, no, it's going to be a little surprise. Kind of looking forward to it though. Mm-hmm. Super excited.
Yeah. What, do you have anything that you're trying to accomplish here or
We would love a real sponsor. That is kind of the goal of this trip, is to find someone that we could, especially with three boats, you know, we're getting ready to outfit a lot of people's hands with some reels. And that's one thing that we just can't get a niche on, you know. Mm-hmm. no one's letting anybody in these nowadays, you know, so it's very, very hard to get that foot in the door.
Well, one of the things that's happened recently is that was different, let's just say 20 years ago, is the availability of product the last few years has been really, 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 I mean, even for the customer that's trying to buy it. Now, 20 years ago, there were times where anybody would just, oh yeah, you help us field test it. You'll help us.
I was on Quantum years ago back when you guys got started. I had Charlie was my rep, and what happened was I did a TV show and I didn't have the Quantums in my hand. Mm. It was a TV show for somebody else, and I brought some personal Shimano's with me. We were fishing for some African Pompano, and I only had some, you know, 2 and 3 thousands. I didn't really have anything really too much bigger at the time. And I brought some of my own reels on the fishing show. And he saw that show. Uh-oh. And I got a nice email the next day. Why didn't you have? I'm like, well, it wasn't my show. And he's like, well, that doesn't really matter. He didn't really happy with it. And of course, everything that was 20 years ago, probably.
Yeah. So that's the good lesson that you teach the boys, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yes, I'm bringing this. I'm sorry.
Nothing's for free.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, like when somebody hands you, like say you get a deal and they give you like, you know, a couple, make sure that you understand what they're asking in return. Like, mm-hmm. is this an exclusive thing? Like, I'm not supposed to be seen with anything else. Or, and if you just like communicate that in advance, then everybody understands. They're like, no, you just use those reels how you would. Send me a report. Let me know how they're doing in 6 months. Send them back to me. Let me look at the damage that you caused. Try to blow them up. Mm-hmm. Right. but then you understand, okay, well, this isn't an exclusive kind of thing. I'm just going to do that. You know, but you understand, both parties understand the expectations of that relationship. That's really a big one, because it can easily go wrong like that.
And just something that I a dumb mistake like that, you know, I just didn't even think about it. And he thought about it. He saw it and it backfired on me, you know?
So, yeah.
So here we are, and we have Shimano's and we have Daiwa's and we have Pin on the boat. You know, it's just, it's what we can get the last couple of years. And it's been very hard.
It's been very hard to get not just reels, but everything.
Hooks, braid,
building materials,
power pros,
drywall,
trolling motors. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's really hard. They're building a house across the street from mine, and it goes real fast for about 3 weeks, and then it just stops. and it's like for 3 or 4 weeks, it just absolutely stops. And I went over and I was asking the guy one time, I was like, why do you do it like this? Like, go real fast and then stop. And he's like, oh, we just run out of whatever we have, you know, like get to the point where it's like, okay, well now we got to put in the tile and there's no tile and we can't do the next step past that until we get that. Right. So holds up the whole job.
Yep. Now we are waiting on appliances and all that stuff too. Yeah.
But it can happen with the boating industry, and I don't know, motors have been hard to get.
We just found some. Took 3 years.
Took 3 years for you to get motors?
Just found some
for our new boat.
We get them in December.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And the build on the new boat, how's that going?
It's a slow process. Couldn't find core, couldn't find fiberglass. And, you know, that's another thing it trickled down onto. So we've been building our custom 30-foot boat for 3 years in June.
Wow.
We just found engines. We're almost done. We're like on the home stretch.
Huh.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. That seems tough.
Yeah.
So who gets the new boat?
I'm going to say that's going to be me. I've been waiting a long time for this one. So yeah, I'm definitely going to go all in on that one. So, and I'm sure that we're going to take turns too, because that's something else that I raising them and growing up is, I never wanted to show them, never want to be a one trick pony, never wanted to just do the backcountry or the offshore. You know, I definitely wanted to let them adapt and take on a little bit of everything. You know, hey, when it's not blowing, we go offshore. Hey, when it's blowing, we can go hide in the coves, you know? So there's always something to do and there's always some kind of fish to go after. So that was one thing that I was teaching them, to be very versatile about that and go with whatever is available.
Mm-hmm. How has the water issues affected you guys over the last few years?
We haven't had an issue since around 2018. That was the last really bad one, the red tide that we got. It was killing the dolphins and the manatees. Mm. And we basically had to pick up our whole operation and start guiding down by the glades. We were, you know, traveling 40 miles south just to go to work.
And you're traveling by trailer, on trailer, trailer, right?
Yeah, just because we'd go out on a charter and there's dead catfish and mullet floating around. You can't take people out of that stuff.
Now, I had heard some people talk about back in that time that they were able to fish, but they just had to go way, way out, 100 miles crazy.
Yeah, and we'd have to adapt with a recirculated live well to keep our pilchards alive because you drive through that water and now all your bait's dead. And it's a serious learning curve, you know, we had to adapt to. But, I mean, you can't say no and you have to go. So.
And did you guys notice any kind of any sort of change that has helped keep that, or are we just being lucky right now, or like what's going on with the water? Before we wrap up our conversation, we're going to take one final break. Be right back.
I'll take a little bit of luck. You know,
sure.
We've definitely had a lot more bait in our area than we've had the last couple of years. It seems like our pilchards were very seasonal for a while because they would all die off. You know, we'd get a whole new batch and then we'd get that tide and it would be all along the beaches and it would just kill that whole batch of pilchards. And now we're waiting for the next season to get the next ones. This year, we really haven't had a problem and we've been having consistent pilchards pretty much all year.
It's a really disturbing thing when the bait dies. Like that's, that's tough. Like, because you could still have like some fish that are smart enough to move out of it or whatever, or they just are lucky enough to move out of it, or they just weren't there to begin with. But when the bait dies, that's very disturbing. So when you say you would kill off a whole, or the, not you would kill off, but the red tide would kill off a whole hatch. And then what did it look like? Are you just all of a sudden you're starting to see more bait around, or is it just a little bit at a time and then it gets to be more and more and then you seem like you're back to normal? Like, what does it look like when it's died off like that and then it comes back in your area?
It seems like last year it came back right after that 2018. It seemed like that 2019, 2020 kind of combo. It was just flooded. I mean, you could, Stevie Wonder could throw a cast net and catch bait. It was, you could walk on them every morning, you know, the sun would come up and you could, as far as you could see, it was just, and just all pearls and, you know, and one and done, and then you're all fishing. And it seemed like that carried over for about a year and they never really left and they never really died off. And it was just, there was some littler ones that were mixed in, but it was always, you had some big cell phones in there too. So it was kind of a mixed batch. You could see the different generations of pilchards in the same area that were all making it through. You know, you had the quarter inch ones and then you had the 3/8 ones, you know, they were all kind of in the same area.
Yeah. I wonder why that is, that it was so good after that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm maybe what those guys were doing and, you know, keeping that water in, and we never really had a bloom. So we haven't had a bloom since 2018. So I'm going to say that's either captains for clean water or luck.
Or both. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with both.
Yeah.
And captains for clean water have certainly done a lot of great work. And then luck.
I'll take that.
And weather too. I mean, like weather can be a huge factor. Like if they get a whole ton of rain, that's what starts the whole deal. Now, what are they going to do with the water? And then it goes out both sides of the state. And that's when
both sides. And then we get the cold front and then that northwest blows and then it just trickles all the way down.
Right. When it rains so much like that, that's where a lot of people have a hard time. And even I had a hard time understanding what the water problems were. It's like, well, wait a minute. There's too much water, but then the Everglades don't have any water.
Yep.
Like, how is it that they're not that far apart, but you guys have just this amazing amount of water coming in there that has all these problems with it, but Flamingo has no water.
It's crazy.
And
snook
then,
and redfish are still closed in our region.
Really?
Until further notice as of FWC.
Really? So you can't fish for them at all,
you cannot keep them. You cannot harvest them. And there's almost a line in the sand at right there at Marco River is where you can keep them. So it's it's so weird because we fish this whole area, but we cannot bring a redfish or a snook over this imaginary line, which is ironically right where our ramp is. Mm. Like our ramp literally is right on the line where you cannot bring. And there's some guys that do bring reds in there, and there's, it depends on what FWC officers at the ramp that day. Some will give you a ticket and some will say, you're on the line, you're okay. We don't kill anything.
Right. That was my next question. Yeah. What do you guys think about that?
No harvest.
No harvest on snook and reds.
That's a game fish.
Or a permit ever. Yeah.
So what do you keep?
Snapper, sheep's head,
triple tail,
trout, triple tail,
cobia.
Mm-hmm. What's your snapper fishing like? What kind of snappers are you fishing for?
Mostly like mangroves and lane snappers. Mostly.
You have big mangroves up there?
Big mangroves.
Yeah.
That's my favorite eating fish. So
that's my favorite snapper.
That's the sweet meat.
I could just eat those. if you said what's the one kind of fish that you would just eat, that would be it. Yep. I would be a mangrove snapper. Yep. I just love them. And how do you guys like to cook them?
Fish tacos. Crunchy fish tacos.
Crunchy fish tacos. Tell me about the crunch. Oh, where are we getting the crunch?
What I do is you go to Publix and you buy every single breading they have there.
Okay.
And you mix it all together. And I kind of put some basically egg wash and just do that and just get the flour tortilla, put all your goodies in, put the fried fish in there. And you got a crunchy fish taco.
So the egg wash, walk me through that. Are you egg washing first, then putting it in the
batter, egg wash, then back to batter?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then, golden brown, and then, get the guac and all your goodies. And,
That sounds terrific.
Crowd pleaser.
One thing that I like also, and I've started doing with my gray snappers, and certainly was doing it with the mutton snappers, is just take the filet straight off, scales on the grill. Scales down.
I've heard of that trick so many times. I've never ever tried it.
Boy, we do that with the redfish. Like if I go to Louisiana,
sure,
you keep redfish. That's what they do. The redfish on the half shell. That's the first time I'd ever had that. And they just fillet the redfish straight off, and that's it. They trim it, maybe, but it scales down. You put it on the grill. You put you put butter, Worcestershire. Kind of, they have like a Worcestershire mix up there with the Cajun spices and the Worcestershire and then butter. And then you just paint that on there, scales down, don't move it.
Wow.
The scales turn black. It looks like you're burning the crap out of it, but you pull it off and I just kind of pick up one half of it. And if it just kind of breaks in half, it's perfectly ready.
Wow.
And then you just get the whole thing. You take a fork and all the meat comes off and you got this burnt skin. But you look at the burnt skin and there's all this caramelized fat underneath there. And the fat almost pours onto the filet.
Oh, wow.
And it's fantastic with mutton snapper. It's fantastic with gray snapper. Maybe don't try, all of them.
Does it tear the grill up with all the scales?
No. They don't come off, man. Really? They stay right on there. Hmm. And then when they burn up, they just shrivel up into almost nothing. And
try that.
But it has to be like a heavy scaled fish.
Sure.
Like a mutton, a redfish, a triple tail.
Sure.
I don't know. I haven't done that with triple tail.
Because
triple tail are rough, but they have like a thin little scale on them.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like they're a prehistoric tough looking fish that would poke you, but they do have like a different kind of, I don't know. Maybe they would be good like that because triple tail is one of the best meats.
Maybe, ever. That's my favorite, hands down. If I had to eat one fish, that would be it.
Triple tail.
And
hog snapper.
We had a really rough year on the triple tail last year.
Really?
We only got one keeper last year, and it was kind of weird because the year before it was gangbusters. There was 3 10 pounders on every trap.
Yeah,
it
that's interesting.
It
because
was like crazy.
We went to we filmed two or maybe even three triple tail shows because it was so good. And it was just like you were talking about, right around Flamingo area.
Yeah, and I knew
they were just everywhere.
And I knew we were going to, I kept saying to the boys, I go, we're going to pay for this. We're averaging 2 10 pounders every half day from our clients.
Do you think Rich ties that back? He looks at that. They changed the regulation, bumped it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the next year it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, that's it. You know, I mean, he just draws a one-to-one relationship with that. I wonder what your thoughts are.
Because as this was happening, I was kind of telling the boys too, I had seen this scenario once before a few years back. I can't remember what year it was, though. I remember there being one good year where it was just big ones, you know, 10 to 15 pounders everywhere. And then the next year, not even little ones, not even the next generation. So it was kind of weird. And it wasn't until I saw that year that I started putting that back into my logbook in my career and wondering what had happened and wondering what happened to those fish. Are they just getting eaten? Or are they just leaving the area, you know, because they're just, there's no rhyme or reason to them. They're just floating around, you know? So we've even seen them on floating on menus. Perry scooped one with a net floating on a restaurant menu a couple of years ago. It was the craziest thing.
They'll be, I mean, if they find anything, they're going to hang around
it
there.
Yeah.
I want to come back to the logbook, but when we were fishing for these red, for these triple tail, they had a red spot on them. It was like, I could probably show you on my phone, but it was like this. And it was so like a bigger than a half dollar. It was so red that you would see the dark fish out there floating and you'd see the red. Sometimes you would look at the red and you would say, okay, I see the red thing.
That's crazy.
You know? And so anyway, we caught these fish and I'm like, what is this red thing on this fish? And I thought it was going to be a big sore. But it wasn't a big sore. It was just like a irritated area. Like they had been rubbing up against something. Or Rich thought that they got sunburned. I was like, I don't know if they got sunburned, but maybe they did. I mean, they just lay there like this.
How crazy.
Right. So I was wondering if you had run across that, because I asked a couple of different scientists and they didn't know what it was. And I sent pictures of it.
We have some pictures of that, of some with some big red scars like that. That one that we caught, that one coming home from that trip. Oh, yeah. And I don't know if it, like, maybe he got hit by a shark or something and he was just laying there and tiger came up and gave him a little nip. We have a few that have, they're not always in the same spot though.
Right.
You know, one was kind of long and skinny and the other ones were kind of round like that too. You have a picture of this one who's called him Scarface. You got to look and it looks fresh. It was,
it looks fresh.
Yes.
It looks like they've been, like if they're on a buoy, it looks like they've just been just rubbing up against this buoy.
The tide is
all day.
Down. Yep.
Right. And it leaves, if you did that with your hand, it would, you would have a red mark on your hand. But you look at it and the scales are kind of knocked off of it a little bit, but it's just kind of a weird thing. And I asked a couple of biologists and they didn't seem to know what I was talking about. So I sent them the pictures and I said, well, we have all these pictures and we were fishing a 2-mile stretch and every single one had this thing.
Wow.
And I don't know what it was. And I haven't really, I don't know. It was like 2 years and they were all like that. And then I haven't really seen them like that. No, I mean, not like, not like that. Not like every one.
Sure.
You're like, look, there's a red one out there. There's another red one. There's another red one.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But I don't know if I mean, you guys fish for triple tail probably way more than I do, but I just found that to be really interesting. And if I can't find them now, I'll send you the pictures.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see what your pictures look like.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
Anybody knows.
I have a couple too.
But that's what, like, this podcast can be really good, because there'd be somebody out there that's like, oh, I know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
They'll send me an email. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've ever talked about it on the podcast. I've probably forgot. So the logbook. You mentioned that you've got a logbook. Have you kept a logbook your whole career?
Not necessarily. Like, I mostly use my pictures now and stuff like that. But it's mostly even in my head.
Yeah.
You know, memories of scenarios that have played out before.
But even if you have, like, a picture, and on the back you write somebody's name, and you write Marquesas, incoming tide, 10:30, June 12th, right? And then you just file that away, right? Later, you pick it up and you go, okay, June 12th, incoming tide. Wow, mm-hmm. I was on this fly hook. Oh, yeah. I forgot I even used to fish there, right? Or whatever it is. But I was just wondering, if you had a book, are you sharing it with your boys?
100%.
And do you realize the value of what you're looking at?
Most, like, certainly.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you do about it? Do you go check those spots out, or do you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because some of them aren't going to be good anymore. And some of them are going to be like to the second of what he wrote down 20 years ago. It's going to be perfect. Like, and then what does that do for you? Do you guys keep a logbook, or do you?
Honestly, through the pictures I take, it does a great job. And what I'll do sometimes is I'll go back through my pictures. I just keep a big album of all fishing pictures, and I'll look at the time, and I'll go on the Tide app, and I'll pull up the tide of when that was caught, where it was at, and I'll kind of put it together that way.
That is such an incredible advantage
as well.
They have it so good. We never had that.
Yeah.
We were had the old cardboard paper and
the Florida Sportsman.
Yes.
The Florida Sportsman book. And so like my mentor was Simon Becker and he told me, like, I'm trying to write down everything and I'm trying, you know, I'm not able to keep up. Like, and I don't have a motivation to write 4 pages of notes after a charter.
Sure.
He's like, look, you don't need to do that. All you need to do is write down where you were and what time you caught the fish. Mm-hmm. Then you can go back and you can look at the chart at the book and you can go, well, I was here at this time. So that was it. The tide was going out.
Yeah.
I would thought it was coming in,
yes,
but it wasn't. It was going out. And then you think, okay, well, that's about an hour and a half into the outgoing tide. And you go back there. And that's really all the information you need. And when you take a picture like that, I mean, God, you could probably have your GPS location on there too, but
yes.
Yeah. And you know exactly where you caught it. And there's some apps that do that now where if you put the picture in, it'll tell you exactly where you were. You don't want that information getting out.
No.
But some people do. That's like they use it like social media.
To a friend. And that stuff can kind of backfire too.
It certainly can.
The boys have actually a friend back at home that this whole scenario just played out. A client sent a captain a picture of a fish that he caught with somebody else. And guess what? All that intel is right there on that photo, where he caught it, what time.
Oh,
and,
thanks.
Yep. And guess who showed up there the next day? That captain with that client.
Oh, that's a tough one right there with the captain and the client show up.
It's a sticky situation for sure.
I had a guy one time before cell phones and before all kinds of things that we have now. And he showed up and he had this little bag and he just kept this little bag next to him. I was like, I think there's a gun in that bag. That's what I thought. I was like, he's just keeping it so close to him. And every now and then he'd kind of look at it. And I was like, what's in the bag? You know, and turns out it was a GPS and he was trying to follow us all the way. And I was like, you know, wow, dude, if you had just told me,
yeah,
like that you're trying to learn your way around.
Sure. Like
I'll show you around, but like, this is a really bad way to go about it. Right. But they could do that with their phone now.
Oh yeah.
All the time. But I guess it's like, what are you going to do with the information instead of
it's been coming
the fact out. That you're just getting the information?
Yeah.
It's only half the battle.
It really is. And we've actually even this month as we've stopped fishing locals because it's kind of backfired on us a little bit and people are seeing our Instagram. And then I'm like on the phone call, I see the area code and then I get their information from the credit card. I got the zip code and I'm like, I sent back, hey, yeah, I just moved here and bought a 24-foot boat and I'm just trying to figure this shit out. Like, whoa, like, thank you for telling me that. And now I'm going to decline. And we've turned down 3 this month just because
really?
Of people trying to figure out what we're doing and where we're doing it at.
You know, I get a lot of people that ask that question. Like, I'm moving to a new area. How do I learn how to do this? And one of the things that I tell them is, you could book a guide, but if you book a guide, you need to tell them,
mm-hmm.
I just moved to the area. I want to be able to run around without running aground. I don't want to mess anybody up. Can you show me some things that I can do where I'm not going to mess you up and I'm not going to go to any, I don't want your spots. I want to learn how to run around here and I want to learn how to find spots for myself. Now, if somebody came to you with that angle, would you be more likely to take them?
Yes. Probably.
You think so? I'm going to say probably not.
You could show them the community hole.
Yeah.
Like whatever that
sandbar.
Is.
Sandbar. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. The bait spot, you know, sometimes.
But we don't really come across people with that motive, unfortunately.
People want our permit.
I want to learn how to find these for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I want you to show me.
That's right? It. And I'm going to pay you one-time fee for showing me where these are. And yeah, that's doesn't sit well with us.
Yeah. But there's more to it than just knowing where they are, right?
There really is. And we could really take somebody out there one time and we could even give them the GPS number. But are they going to be able to use the tactics that we all know and that we've all been applying on these fish for decades now? Probably not. They're going to lose everyone. They're going to spend $200 on crabs and probably come home and yell at the missus. But I don't even want to give them that far, you know, unfortunately, because it's very, very tight. And what we have is special, very, very special, and we'd like to keep it where it is.
I believe it. I believe it. So what does the future look like for you guys?
I'd say pretty bright. You know, we do have this offshore boat coming and it's being built, and that privateer that he brought up that we do have is actually in the shop right now, getting completely rebuilt, new fiberglass and everything. So that thing's going to be bulletproof. And then we have that Sabalo, and we're kind of on the fence right now, whether of either just selling it or getting it rebuilt, but I would like to get it rebuilt, you know, and you know, throughout the years, you'll definitely get a second win when we get this big boat for sure. And we will all be working on that as much as we can. And, you know, hopefully get, you know, a fleet going eventually, and, you know, my kids or his kids in the future to try and keep it going. But like you said earlier, you know, he likes fishing. He wants to be a captain and he wants to do his separate thing. So
maybe.
Yeah.
Never know.
Exactly.
Never know. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people want to move away from the area because it's like small, or they want to do something different. But if you love the area and you don't want to leave, then what could be better than being a fishing guide in an area like Naples or Key West, or would you rather sell insurance in Key West? Or you want to be a fishing guide?
That's right. And I've handed them pass the torch here to them, and you know, they just got to pick up the pieces and put them together, you know. So I've already done all the hard work, you know, and paid my dues through time, and now it's their turn, you know. My clients, all the clients rant and rave about them, you know, that there's an incredible team, and just makes me proud, you know.
Nice.
I can't say it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious. It comes through in your post. So I wish you guys the best. How would somebody go fishing with any or all of you?
Go on our website, NaplesOffshoreFishingCharters.com. We got our phone numbers there, a whole little book and thing to make it nice and easy. That would be how.
That's it. And what's the Instagram?
On a Mission Fishing Charters.
And then, but each of you have a follow have, all yes. of you. So yeah, what are your handles?
Captain West Bedell.
And then mine is Captain Weston Bedell.
Mine's Captain Perry Bedell.
Oh man, you nice guys didn't want to deviate.
Keep it easy.
Yeah, that's great. Right. That's great. Well, I'd love to do that permit fishing with you one time. Maybe I'll come on. Maybe now. I'll see if I can get Clay to bring me along one
there
day.
There you go. Absolutely, we would love that.
I am a permit aficionado. I love them. They are my favorite fish, and I don't care where I catch them. They can be in 6 inches of water or 600 feet of water. Yeah, I like agree. Them all the same.
So. We'll put you on there. You'll be gunnel hugging in no time.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I hope you have a great iCast show, and we'll see you on the boat one of these days.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you.